This is WABF, and it's time now for the Conservative Watchdog Weekly News Review with Dr. Lou Campominosi from the Common Sense Campaign. This program is brought to you by Spriggs Enterprises, featuring the Shell gas stations in Daphne on 90 and 98, and in Malbus, featuring a first-class car wash in Malbus there at 181. And welcome, Dr. Lou.
Well, hello, Lori. It's so good to be back here.
Yes, it is.
Despite the bad weather we've had and the bad political stuff we keep seeing, I don't know if there's a cause and effect there. But regardless of whether we have good weather or bad weather, we're going to be here talking about what went on, you know, in the past week. That's what this program is supposed to be all about, the Watchdog News Review. So let me just say this. There is a lot of news to talk about, okay? So I want to talk about the Biden speech. I think there's a practical and a philosophical way to critique it, and I'll get into that. I want to talk about one of the things that Biden and his educational people are doing, which is to implement critical race theory and the 1619 Project, which we've talked about, okay?
Mm-hmm.
But they're going forward with this. And what they're trying to do is to reach out to your local school board to have them implement it using the same technique they did with getting the states to take Common Core. They're offering grants and things like that. They're buying their way into the educational system at the local level. It's a diabolical plan, and we need to talk about it and make sure we are on guard against it. I do want to talk about what happened with the Eastern Shore MPO this past week. You've heard some things about it, and I think we need to just kind of put this into perspective as to what's really going on and the fact that they do have a public hearing coming up on the 19th of May. So we need to be aware of that. I also want to talk about HB 440, which was a bill to replace Common Core. Look, I know that there are all sorts of bills up there. We've had discussions with, you know, Senator Elliott. I think last week he was on. The bottom line is that of all the things that are happening in the legislature, education is one of the most critical things that's there. Because if we lose another generation to Common Core, well, what you're seeing with AOC and all these people, that's what you're going to get. And while we may think that, you know, cradle-to-grave socialism is just an anathema and a horror, if you're going to grow kids up on supporting that, then don't be surprised if that's where this country's going. So we have got to take some sort of steps, and I'll talk a little bit about that if I don't run out too much time. Then I want to mention a little bit about Common Sense Campaign's Tax Day rally, which is coming up on Saturday, the 8th of May. We've got a good lineup there, and I want to just make sure everyone knows about that. So let me get into this Biden business, okay? He gave his talk. Now, notice how they did this. I mean, you had a chamber that could hold 500 people, and yet it was sparsely populated. Now, Lori, why do you think that's the case?
I thought it was intentionally because of the pandemic.
Yes, they don't want to send a signal that just because these people were inoculated, that doesn't mean it's safe. So we have to do super special social distancing, and we have to wear masks. And yet the CDC director is telling you, hey, if you're inoculated, it's okay, even indoors. Yes, you know, you should be, you know, careful maybe. But if it's outdoors, hey, it's fine. Take your mask off. Enjoy it. And yet, so many of the Democrats, particularly some of these state Democrats, particularly Michigan and California, New York, they want to hold on to this lockdown power. And it's going to be an interesting thing to see how this works itself out, because there are groups that are starting to challenge constitutionally, you know, the lockdown process. It's an overstepping of bounds. Even in Alabama, they're trying to bring it up here to make sure that Governor Ivey doesn't go down this road again.
Pass legislation to prevent
that. Passing
actually
legislation.
Health officer.
That's SB 97, if I'm not mistaken, and that may not be as far along as we want it, but the point is that there's a real rejection at this point of continuing mass lockdowns, particularly since it's so unfair on the one hand to say, well, you can go to Walmart, you can go to wherever, but you can't go to the restaurant, can't go to the bar, and the poor restaurant owners are suffering. Some of them have gone out of business, others have put together, you know, a plan to keep themselves, excuse me, you know, on a short string of life. But in the end, what in the world are some of these governors doing? They're perpetuating something that doesn't need to be done, and it's totally wrong. So how long, you know, the Democratic Party wants to embrace this really turns on, I think, the degree to which there's little resistance, and if they get their way with all of their spending, okay? So my sense here is that where we need to go with this is to make sure that the signal that the Democrats are sending, and this is part and parcel of what I wanted to talk about with Biden's speech, okay? The practical critique basically is that, number one, he's trying to spend all this money, which it's over $6 trillion, okay? Yeah, I mean, just look at it this way, okay? $1.9 trillion for the American Recovery Plan, $2.3 trillion for the American Jobs Plan, $1.8 for the American Family Plan. I mean, that adds up to almost 6 million.
Plus the transportation plan. Is that, did you mention infrastructure transportation?
No, I didn't mention that because that hasn't gone, you know, yet. And hopefully it won't, because it's only 15% of it is for transportation. But here we get back to this question of where's the money coming from? We're going to continue to print money. We're already at $28 trillion in debt. And the real secret here is that because the interest rates are so low, they've been able to finance the debt and only have to pay the interest on the debt, and it comes out of your annual budget. If the interest rates go up, which they inevitably will, and if they go back to the normal 5%, do you realize that a good half of your regular budget, your annual budget, federal budget, is going to be paid up just to take care of the interest on the debt? Servicing the debt has been manageable only because the interest rates have been low. And even though they're low, that doesn't mean they're going to stay low. So I would think that adding another $6 trillion or so makes absolutely no sense if you don't have the money. And of course, Biden says, well, we're going to pay for this by raising taxes. And so one has to ask the question, you know, how did all of those high taxes on business, it was at 35% when Trump came in, what was the net effect of that? And the simple answer is, well, many of these companies just fled overseas, many to China. But with the tax cuts that Trump put in, brought them from 35 to 21, the fact of the matter is that here you have a situation where that brought billions of dollars back to this country, and not only created an economic boom, but if you look at the unemployment rates across the board, whether it's women, whether it's blacks, whether it's Hispanics, historically low unemployment rates. Now, the argument here is, you're shaking your head. You didn't.
Because of the high unemployment issue, at least for finding particularly restaurant workers here.
Yeah, but this is pre-pandemic, okay?
Okay.
Yeah, okay, pre-pandemic. I'm sorry.
That's okay, continue.
If Lori was confused, then I'm sure other folks are out here. What are you talking about, Lou? Okay, got it. All right, so here's the situation then. The question of raising taxes on business sounds good. I mean, they keep talking about let the wealthiest pay their fair share. I mean, the statistics that were out there before Trump won basically showed that the top 10% of the taxpayers, of the earners, paid 70% of the taxes. Now, I don't know, how much more fair do you want to get? But let's just assume for a second that the fairness question is not a real question. It's just being used to hammer the rich, which is part and parcel of what the Democrats always do. Okay, so we'll give them that, all right? But what you end up doing, especially if you're going to tax at the level of $400,000 and up, who's going to be taxed most by that? The small business owners who are then going to be unable to hire more people. And it's the small business owners who really drive the hiring process and create most of the jobs. So I think that from a practical standpoint, the fact is that Biden's attempt to try to spend more and sell it as crisis management when there is no real crisis at this point, the fact is that it just doesn't wash. But the philosophical part of this is just as important. And at this juncture, how is it that after all of these years of fighting, and I've mentioned this to everyone before, we fought and won the Cold War. And part of the argument that brought us victory in the Cold War was the war of ideas. And whose ideas were better? Whose ideas fit the American dream? Whose ideas fit the American philosophy that's found in our governing documents? We hold these truths to be self-evident. All men are created equal. You know, we're in favor of life, liberty, and the pursuit of justice. All of those things are philosophical statements that run up against a major problem with socialism leading to communism. And, I mean, take your pick. Where do you see cradle-to-grave socialism really working? It certainly did not work. Well, philosophically, it wasn't part of what Marx was talking about. I mean, Marx always thought that the state would wither away. Unfortunately, he forgot to add, you know, a human equation into it that, you know, once people get power, they just might not want to give it up, okay? And so the Leninist reformulation of Marx, that in order for Marx's revolution to even take place, required a cadre of highly motivated political operatives who could take the masses to the point where they would revolt, and then they would then be the caretakers of what the masses had wrought. Now, how do you look at that in terms of past history? Okay, the Communist Party fastened itself on Russia and did whatever they had to do to maintain power. And once Lenin was gone, Stalin did what he did through the organs of power to keep power. He killed his enemies. He did whatever he had to do to keep himself in power. Now, somewhere along the line, you know, even those people who were supportive of the communist revolution during the 30s, and there were a lot of American communists who were persuaded. I mean, just, you know, that's just the reality. But the fact of the matter was is that even communism at the height of the Depression did not take hold in this country for a lot of different reasons, but principally because there is something fundamentally at odds with the American tradition of individualism, rugged individualism, capitalism, and the freedom that goes with it. Yes, I know intellectuals were persuaded to join the Communist Party. Got it. But it never really took hold anywhere else, despite the suffering of during the Depression, especially in the early years. So my point here is that from a philosophical standpoint, and, you know, just think carefully about it. It's unfortunate, though, that our younger generation, and again, the critique we have given about Common Core has been all along the lines of, in American history, they are teaching that it's just racist, imperialist, misogynist, and homophobic. and it's wrapped up in an anti-capitalist message that says, you know, capitalism is bad, socialism is good. So, I mean, those kinds of ideas, like I said, were rejected during the Great Depression, were rejected after the war, were rejected well into the 60s, but were starting to receive, you know, more of a philosophical approval from certain elements within the radical left, Herbert Marcuse and people like that. Okay? So, despite the fact that you had a philosophical renaissance of, you know, the whole Marxist leftist tradition, it was really the Vietnam War that generated the kind of opposition to everything in the United States. And the anti-war movement, you know, spawned all sorts of radical left movements inside it. And the result of that has been, particularly in media, particularly in the academic world, a major movement to criticize American foreign policy and American social policy. The social policy argument basically said structural problems in the United States are the cause of poverty and racism. Questions about American foreign policy are related directly to the Marxist interpretation that big business needs government to find markets. Markets are going to be taken over by whatever means necessary to make sure that the owners are rewarded. I mean, that's the long and the short of it. So from a philosophical perspective, the arguments that had that really kind of popped up in the early 60s and then during the war, the Vietnam War period, have suddenly blossomed into the woke culture. I mean, the roots of it are there. So now we're dealing with wokeism linked to cradle-to-grave socialism. And my basic point here is that there's no way that they can show that socialism has ever worked. And you say, okay, well, there's always the, you know, the Scandinavian model. Well, even the Scandinavian model was moved away from socialism because they couldn't sustain it. And so by the mid-80s, there was a major change in how those Scandinavian countries went about doing things. Of course, it didn't hurt that Norway actually discovered oil in the North Sea. That kind of helped them. But Sweden and others became much more oriented towards a capitalist approach in their economy. So once again, we know that on the far left, the Chinese model, the Russian model, the Venezuelan, the Cuban, they do not work. That's a given. The more, you know, soft left-wing models that they want to refer to in the Scandinavian countries also did not work, even though they were democratic socialism, to use Bernie Sanders' term. All right? So here we are. I mean, I think that from a practical and a philosophical standpoint, Biden's speech should just be thrown away. If I had been Nancy Pelosi, I would have torn that one up too. Okay? But she didn't. Of course not. Oh, no. They're quite happy with all this. So we'll see how this is going to go. But I do think that it's critical that we make sure that another element of what they're trying to do in terms of embracing critical race theory is absolutely stopped. Okay? When you combine critical race theory with the 1619 Project, what you have created is a brew that will destroy the unity of this country. And you say, well, how can that be? We've got systemic racism that we have to root out. As Tim Scott said in his rebuttal, this country is not racist. Well, let's just kind of unpack this for a second, okay? If the claim is systemic racism exists, and I've said this to you all before, and I'll say it again, because sometimes you have to keep repeating the truth in order to get it through. So number one, systemic racism. We just went through a black president being elected, didn't we? And the math is there. Obama could not have gotten elected without white support. So how is this systemically, you know, coherent to talk about systemic racism when you had Obama winning twice? Okay? Let's talk about it in terms of a political revolution that I've mentioned to you all before. 1960, you had about 1,000 black elected officials throughout the country. By 2012, it's over 10,000. Where's the systemic racism that is preventing all of these black officials to get elected? I mean, how do you square this? I don't get this. Okay? The other, you know, problem they have with defending this is that on the social side of things, 17% of all marriages today are interracial. If we're all systemically racist, how the hell are you starting to see 17% of all marriages take place? When you look at it from an interracial standpoint, 1970, I've mentioned this before, 250,000 interracial marriages. Now, over 5 million. And I mean, to tell you the truth, I haven't checked those statistics for about 3 years, so it's probably more. But the point is, how do you say we are systemically racist if we have a social and political revolution that I've just described to you? I just don't get that. But you see, critical race theory is trying to sell this argument that that's exactly who we are. We are systemically racist. And the only way to solve that is to put people into these re-education type camps, you know. And I'm using that symbolically, okay? It's a metaphor for what they're doing, okay? But in the U.S. government today, okay, Congressman Michael Walsh from Florida, sent a letter to the commandant of West Point. How can you let this radical left-wing professor from Emory come up there and talk about how we are all racist, when the fact of the matter is, and you know, Walsh was a Green Beret, several tours in Iraq and Afghanistan. He said the building block of our military ethos is basically there's no color, no religions, we're just, you know, army people doing our job, working as a unit to accomplish the mission. Now think about that. If you're going to say that your buddy in your squad is inherently a racist and we're now going into a combat situation, can you really trust that guy to be there for you? Well, I mean, the long and the short of it is, philosophically, they're undermining the unity of the squad. And, you know, that goes completely in the opposite direction of the unity that has to be there if you're going to have the squads, the combat squads especially, be effective. That's another reason why, you know, having women in the combat squads or homosexuals in the combat squads or transgenders in the combat squads becomes problematic, because relationships are going to be formed that do not necessarily support the mission of the squad. Okay? Sally and Johnny, they're having a relationship. The squad leader tells Sally, it's your turn to go out on this outpost. Johnny says, hell no, it's too dangerous, she's not going. Now we got a problem there at Houston. So I'm just saying here, this whole question about keeping the Army unified along its central missions and moving towards a colorblind approach to things, you know, in the Army setting is absolutely critical. But this is exactly what Dr. King talked about in terms of colorblind approaches to things. How is this going to really work if we're going to just become, you know, this identity politics is going to be carried to the nth degree. The balkanization of this country has already begun. That's what identity politics and multiculturalism have led to. Now, can we put it back together? Sure, but it's going to take us to get involved with this. And I would urge you to go to the Common Sense Campaign. We're going to be posting some information on there so that you can see exactly what you can do. There's going to be an open public period, comment period, that's being held by the feds. So if you go on the website, you can put your comments in. You can go to the Common Sense Campaign website and find some sources for you to take a look at before you call and comment on it. But hell, if you're listening to this, you can just do what I said and say, you know, there are social and political revolutions that have taken place since the mid-60s that sort of undermine the whole theory about critical race theory, okay? Let me briefly talk about the 1619 Project, because here again, we get back to this basic misinformation, disinformation about American history. Why are they saying that the American Revolution was fought to keep slavery? Okay? Because this is the argument that they want to sell to a bunch of people who don't know anything about history, okay, and are willing, you know, it's Lenin's idea. You know, the idiots who are going to go along with us are going to be there. We just have to sell it enough. Okay, so that's what they're doing. 1619, American Revolution was all about saving the colonies from abolition. The problem with this, as I've mentioned to you all before, 1688, Germantown meeting, Quakers in Pennsylvania basically say, if you want to be a Quaker, you can't own a slave. Duh. Duh. How is it that you get a damn Pulitzer friggin' prize and you don't know the basic things about the history? So Miss Jones gets her Pulitzer. Meanwhile, by 1754, the Quakers have said no to anyone being a Quaker if you have a slave. Okay? By 1780, three states had already manumitted the slaves, abolished slavery. 1783, two more. I mean, how does this stand to reason that the revolution was all about preserving slavery when we're abolishing it? And the short answer is, there is a political objective, an agenda that wants to undermine the very basic fabric of the country's history, particularly its founding documents. That's the long and the short of it. Now, are we supposed to sit back and say, well, it's okay, it's a free country, they can say anything they want? No, BS on that. You can't just say anything. Let's put it this way. You can't go to the theater and yell fire. So why the hell should we put up with false information? That's exactly what the Communist Party has always said about this country. Okay? So if I sound like Joe McCarthy, fine, bring it on. I really don't care who says what about what I'm saying here. Okay? Because it's incontrovertible in terms of the history. But you see, wokeism has taken us down the road. It just doesn't matter. It's whatever you say, whatever you feel, have at it. Have at it. Oh, boy. Okay, all right. I don't want to get too hooked up on here.
Do I need to check your blood pressure?
Check the blood pressure. What you really need to do is take my time here, Lori. Okay, so I've stayed too long on that. So, Eastern Shore MPO. Let me quickly say this, okay? Eastern Shore MPO was trying to play nice with Montgomery. I understand that. I kind of agree with it. I think something has to be done because Ivy did nothing to get off her rear to help us get a stupid bridge, okay? She told us, hey, tell us what you want. And for a year, nothing was said. Now they're all in kumbaya mode. They're trying to do something. Mainly for her, I think, because she wants to have something positive for her reelection campaign. She can get all the positives she wants about the bridge. It's not going to make any difference. We are going to find a candidate to run against her for sure. I don't care who it is. I won't say I'm going to do it because I'm too old. But nevertheless, here you are What's happening is the Eastern Shore MPO has basically agreed to move forward, but they want to have public input on this, and it's May 19th at 10 o'clock in the morning. Place to be announced, but I think it's either going to be at the Daphne Civic Center or someplace like that. They'll have enough space for people to get to. Public input's important. And I said this on TV the other day. They interviewed me about it. And I said, look, if you don't get engaged, then then you can't complain about the results. So get engaged. Watch what's going on. Show up and talk about it if you have your ideas about what they're doing, okay? The other thing I want to talk about today, and I've got now a minute, but I'm sure Lori will give me, in the generous sense of her heart, she'll give me that extra minute. Okay, so HB 440. This we've been talking about. I've been sending out action alerts the last 2 weeks. We bought radio ads in North Alabama, basically saying, and I have to thank Lori for cutting that radio ad for me.
You're welcome.
Okay. The radio ad basically said, this is our opportunity to get rid of Common Core. 10 years, we're at the bottom. It's unacceptable for us to be 52nd in NAEP, the National Assessment Program, 52nd in math, 48th in ELA, English, and the legislature passes once again. It's like, are we living in a separate world here? They don't see this? And of course, the short answer is, because the BCA has given them so much damn money, they're not going to see it, because their campaigns are hinging on getting enough money to stay in office. This is BS at the highest level, okay? And this is, we're going to figure out a way to deal with the legislature. But here's another, a little ray of hope here. Our SBOE team is working with the State Board of Education. We've had Jackie Ziegler on about this. We now have 4 votes to get rid of Common Core through the State Board of Education. We're looking for the 5th vote. We're hoping that Ivy will do something, finally. We'll see if this happens. If it doesn't happen, we're concurrently looking to find the 5th vote with about 3 other candidates. I'll give you a brief on that. May 24th, our team has another meeting with Terry Lathan and the governor's staff. We'll see where this one goes. No, last day, last point I want to make, okay? The Fowl River Community Center is where we're going to have our tax day rally. This is our annual rally. Obviously, we didn't have one last year. But if you'll go to the Common Sense Campaign website, you will find it. We're spreading this out. Our media lady, the Common Sense girl, Linda King, she's already sent information out to the press. So we'll see whether or not the press publicizes any of this. But go to the Common Sense Campaign website. You'll see all the information you need about where we are. But it's May 8th, 11:30. And guess what? There's actually a free lunch involved here. Common Sense Campaign is going to provide hot dogs, hamburgers, some sides, and we're going to have auctions on cakes. I already know that one of our members is going to have a rum cake, which I bought that one last year, and I'm buying it again this year. I don't care how much it costs. Well, not really, but my wife has the checkbook, and so I will be restrained as far as that goes. But this is a fun event. We've got Jerry Carl coming. We've got other speakers coming. So take a quick look, and you'll see exactly, Jim Ziegler's coming, Shane Stringer, representative from out there, Charlie Wyckoff, who's a Bama Cary representative, Pastor Rusty Johnson, the Lighthouse of Hope Church in Irvington, and Pastor Art Watkins, who is a Coden Bible Church, who is an advocate supporter of the Second Amendment. So we've got a good lineup. I'll be the MC, so that kind of detracts from things, I know, but nevertheless, here we are, folks. It is now 10:38. Lori has given me extra 3 minutes. I know I'm going to get a big bill on this one, but I enjoyed having time today with you all. A lot of interesting things happening. Take care, and just stay engaged or get engaged, and we'll see you next week. God bless. Take care.
Thank you. Thank you, Dr. Lou. Dr. Lou Campo-Minosi is with the Common Sense Campaign, and he's also adjunct political science professor at Spring Hill College. If you missed this program, you can listen to it later at WABF1480.com. You've been listening to the Conservative Watchdog Weekly News Review, brought to you by Spriggs Enterprises, featuring the Shell gas stations in Daphne on Highways 90 and 98, and in Malbus on 181 with a first-class car wash. This is WABF, now resuming our regular programming.
Every time I see you looking my way, baby, baby, can't you hear my heartbeat?